Hey, Deserving listeners, let's watch the trial. Let's do it.
Also a very kind, patient, loving, gentle man. And our mom was the opposite. She was very high-strung, very nervous, anxiety, angry.
All right, so we're learning from Johnny Depp's older sister. She's 2 years older than him. We're learning that there were four kids in the family, and they were the two youngest, and they had two older siblings that were a lot older. We're also learning from her the father was very nice and accommodating, and the mom was abusive and anxious and emotionally erratic. We also heard from her that Johnny Depp, as a kid, was kind of a clown, kind of a prankster, very caring and warm and fun as a kid.
So they were completely opposite people.
Did your mother, Betty, ever get angry with your father?
Yes.
How would your mother express her anger toward your father?
Mom would, she would scream, she would yell at him, she would hit him.
It's interesting. I think it's tangentially related to this case. I mean, the jury is there to decide whether or not Amber Heard is guilty of defamation, whether she essentially lied and harmed his career. And by the way, I didn't react to all the other opening statements because I felt like they were, it was like an introductory paragraph. And I was like, well, I don't know. We'll wait until the evidence comes out. It seems like there's going to be a lot of evidence that they're going to go over. And I will say that in summary of Amber Heard team's lawyers, the lawyer was saying to the jury, you're not here to decide upon who was the bad guy, who was the abusive one. You're here to decide on the First Amendment, on freedom of speech, that Amber Heard, in her statement that she made to the Washington Post, has every right to have said what she said, and there's nothing wrong with what she said. They actually read the entire statement, the entire piece, which I think I remember reading in the past, but it's not a lot about Johnny Depp, but you could argue that the most salacious detail in there, which isn't elaborately discussed, is the implication, the very obvious implication that Johnny Depp is abusive. I don't know. When I hear that, I'm like, well, the First Amendment, yeah, I mean, every freedom of speech, it's important, but you don't have the right to lie about someone and ruin their career. But they actually laid out a lot of details that they're going to demonstrate over time with witness testimony that Johnny Depp had a huge problem with alcohol and drugs, and that he was indeed abusive, that he was verbally abusive. There's texts, apparently. It sounded interesting, and it sounded compelling, honestly. Now, maybe they'll get to their point here, that what they're trying to say is that it's a recreation, this relationship between their parents, where the father was very accommodating, the mother was very abusive and angry, that Johnny Depp recreated that relationship with Amber. But we all understand that he could have easily recreated the relationship in multiple ways, including identifying with the abuser. That's one of the damaging effects of witnessing violence or being a victim of violence, is that you're somewhat more likely to engage in violence and abuse later on, even though you know how horrible it feels to have gone through that, because of the defenses that have to be used in order to cope with the abuse as a child. One defense, for example, is you feel very powerless. You're 10 years old and you're watching your parents engage in violence, or they're abusing you or your sibling, and you feel powerless. Think of the way Will Smith talked about what he went through, watching his dad abuse his mom, and how as a kid he thought he was a coward. It's this impotent feeling that children will go through. And since kids don't have the ability to logic their way through it, they'll conclude it's all their fault. I'm powerless. I was a coward. I should have stood up. I know if I was a better kid, this never would have happened. Like, kids will come to those conclusions because they don't know better, and they're also fairly self-centered in the way they narrativize the world. A defense is, I will overcompensate for my lack of power by becoming powerful, because I frequently feel powerless, so I'm going to try to adopt a powerful persona. And who's powerful in my life that I can use as a role model? Well, the abusive parent. So I will become like them. I will act like them. I will think like them. And I will perhaps abuse my siblings, or I might even abuse the victim parent. And then as an adult, I continue to engage in that because it's become a pattern. So the fact that he went through abuse as a child, I don't know, at least for me in terms of my understanding. Now, it's all about the jury, right? So if the jury is provoked to sympathy, if the jury is provoked to think, oh, it's the same, so therefore it must be the same. Like, it doesn't, it's not a logical connection, right?
Call them names, that kind of thing.
Did your father ever hit your mother back?
No, Dad never reacted.
Now, I should mention, another defense is to internalize through projective identification, and I don't have time to go into it because I don't know, I don't want to go into it now, but the idea is that you internalize a relationship and you recreate it. You might even find someone that agrees with one side of the relationship. You say you were abused, so you have the abuser and the abusee, and you internalize that whole thing, the dyad, the abusee. You internalize a version of yourself, because you're observing the self and you're observing the other and everything that's associated with it, and it becomes an internalization. Then later on in life, you recreate it through projective identification, where you identify with one side or the other. You might identify with the victim and you might find someone who abuses you, or you might identify with the abuser and find someone who is easily victimized. That's another defense.
Did you book your brother's hotel accommodations during the 14 years that when he was with Vanessa Paradis?
Yes.
Did you ever book an extra room when he was with her?
Objection leading.
No.
Overall, allow that one. Go ahead.
Okay, so there was a lot of fluff that I didn't react to. I'm reminded of my time spent in courtrooms. In my early career, I don't know, maybe once a week, I would spend time in a courtroom, and I realized early in my life that real courtrooms are nothing like they depict them in the movies and TV shows. They are boring affairs. Every once in a while, something interesting will happen, but it's just like, so. And so I'm just reminded of sitting there and just going, you know, but getting paid. So, you know, what are you going to do? But she, Johnny Depp's sister, talked about how the dad would escape the mom when the mom was abusive. She also talked about how her and Johnny Depp would escape the mom by going into their room. And she's been very close to Johnny Depp because she essentially is his business manager. And with Vanessa, was it Vanessa Paradis? By the way, I remember when one of her albums came out 20 years ago. I remember I really liked it. It was produced by Lenny Kravitz. Anyway, Johnny Depp was married to her. And during that time, the sister never had to book a second room the way that she did with when Johnny Depp was with Amber Heard, because with Amber Heard, the sister knew that Johnny Depp would want to escape and he needed to have that option. The sister didn't ever, in the 14 years that she made the travel arrangements for Johnny Depp and Vanessa Paradis, she never booked another room. But with Amber Heard, it was all, you know, frequently the case. What does that say? Well, it paints a picture for sure. By the way, I don't think I've emphasized another possible conclusion. I'm trying to figure out, like, where am I going to land at the end? Am I going to be confused? Am I going to think one is guilty, the other one's not? But another conclusion that I've come to in cases like this is that they both were abusers and both were victims. Maybe there's like a 60-40 situation, but that can happen. And it does sometimes. Those situations are really hard to sift through because you're thinking, am I just blaming the victim by labeling them as a occasional abuser and they're both to blame? Because certainly that can happen, right? You can have two people vying for power, two people that were raised in abusive households. And by the way, in the opening statement, they talked about how Amber Heard actually wrote in that piece for Washington Post that she went through some very, very difficult abuse in her childhood, physically, sexually, verbally, I think. One scenario that you can have is that you have two people that come from abuse. They both will alternate between victim and abuser, and both are abusing each other and both are victims of each other. Well, what do you do in a situation like that regarding crime? You know, who's to blame? It gets messy. And again, we want to really make sure, if we're going to come to that conclusion, we want to really make sure that we have a lot of data to back that up, because if we're identifying definite abuse that's happening and we make the mistake by blaming the victim because they occasionally will defend themselves, then that would be a travesty of justice and horrible, right?
Did you ever hear your brother and Ms. Heard argue?
No.
Did you ever see or hear any physical altercation between your brother and Ms. Heard?
No.
the lawyer just asked the sister, did you ever see any arguments or see any violence? And the sister said no. What does that tell us? Well, I don't know.
When I saw them, he was always trying to make sure, he was always trying to make her happy.
Okay, but we're probably going to hear a similar account from Amber's people, that Amber was always trying to make Johnny Depp happy or something. I don't know if we're going to see that, but we just have to take her word with a grain of salt. Not that she's lying, but that she would be biased because she loves her brother. She might not have ever liked Amber Heard. I don't know. But for according to her, observing them together, he was frequently trying to please her. Okay.
He always made effort to sort of make her happy. I think she had a very, she has a very strong personality, and my brother's personality came off much more soft at that point to me.
Did you observe any occasions in which Ms. Heard was nice to your brother?
Yes, I've seen her be nice to him.
Have you witnessed any occasions on which Ms. Heard wasn't nice to your brother?
I have, actually. On one occasion, because this one really stayed with me. I was at the office and I'd had a meeting. Amber had come in and asked if she was interrupting us, and we said no. And Johnny told Amber that I had just had a meeting with Dior, and that, you know, they were interested in him. Her reaction to that was she was in disbelief and sort of disgust, because she said, "Dior, why would Dior want to do business with you? They're about class and they're about style, and you don't have style." You know, so it was the insulting kind of taking away that one moment.
Interesting. It doesn't mean that she loses the case, but so far the sister seems quite believable. There were a lot of opportunities for her to spin things in a particular way or to have signs of spinning, and there didn't seem to have that. But she is saying that they met with Dior. Is that a perfume cologne thingy? They asked, you know, if Johnny Depp would want to be a spokesperson for them, and when Amber Heard found out, she said, "You? But, you know, Dior's about fashion and you're not fashionable." And who knows how she meant it? Who knows what really happened? Who knows if it happened? But if it did happen, it does add to the picture of Amber Heard being mean, having a tendency to be hurtful, to have a hurtful impulse. Because if that happened, right, you know, if your partner did that to you, particularly if it doesn't make any sense, right? Because I don't know about y'all, but I find Johnny Depp, in terms of his public image, to be, I don't know if it's like super fashionable, but he's not a schlub. He's not like me and these shirts, like his hair and his all of his accoutrement and the scarves and the sunglasses and the hats and the tattoos. And to say to him, "You?" And, you know, he's arguably one of the biggest stars in the world. So why would it be so strange? But given the hypothesis that Dr. Curry was putting, or the diagnoses that she was putting forward, and the conceptualization of Amber Heard's personality that she was putting forward, how would that fit in that? It would be possibly the histrionic in that, well, Johnny Depp is getting attention and thus I'm not getting attention. And I don't know. This is all, I'm just trying to speculate, just trying to piece things together. I could be completely off base this whole time, but using it as a jumping off point, not all histrionic people, but some, even when they're quite young, and that's usually where it begins, that they will feel in a constant state of a lack of attention. And remember, as I've said in earlier videos, they were abused essentially or mistreated in a way that involved a lack of attention. And they concluded that if they can constantly try to garner attention, they'll get a little bit more attunement and thus feel safe and worthy. Because all kids need to feel safe and worthy and attuned to and noticed and understood and held. And when you don't have enough of that, then you have to amp up your signals to get attention by being louder or having a more expressive face or lying or having bigger emotions or, you know, crying wolf, you know, for example. Then that becomes an automatic habit neurologically, and you're 35 and you operate from that place. We're in reality at 2, but it's no longer longer true, that you're in a constant state of danger of being abandoned. And the only way to stave off abandonment and terror and annihilation is to constantly be trying to get attention. And if you had a sibling or someone that kind of locked in this sort of ancillary part of the schema, that if anyone else gets attention, that means I'm not going to get attention. So if anyone else gets attention, that's a threat, and I have to shut that down. And so I got to get out in front of that. And if Johnny Depp gets this attention, I'm not getting attention. And now on the surface, you would say, well, what a jerk face. Why would you be jealous of that? Why would you get upset? Well, that's not exactly what's happening. That's the way it looks. And there is an element of that. But on the inside, it's utter terror for the histrionic person, for someone else to get attention. It's totally illogical, of course. It made sense when they were younger, probably. But someone else is getting attention and they fall through the floor with their anxiety. It's just, oh no, I'm going to be left alone. And it's an unnamed fear that these people have. When I work with them, it takes a long time to get in touch with that and to understand it. And it feels very real. And then you'll do anything to get out of that feeling, including either getting the attention from the other person, like calling Dior and saying, you don't want to be with Johnny, you want to be with me, or stopping it at the recipient and saying like, well, you're not worth it. And then the person will shrink away and then they don't get the attention and then you get it.
You know, that insult is there. You know, I've seen the insults multiple times, actually.
What, if anything, did you hear Ms. Heard say about Mr. Depp's physical appearance?
She called him an old fat man.
Interesting. So she's saying on multiple occasions, Amber Heard was insulting and mean. There's this one time that she remembers when she called Johnny Depp an old fat man. So this is all kind of in that category. And by the way, I'm speculating a lot about Amber Heard's personality, primarily because at least I don't know if it's happened yet. I'm sure I'll get to it if I'm going to wade my way through every single second of this trial. No forensic psychologist has evaluated Johnny Depp and talked about it in the hearing. As far as I'm guessing that'll happen eventually, right? Because if you're going to do that to Amber Heard, I mean, I'm expecting there to be four forensic psychologists, one for the Johnny Depp team for Amber and one for the Johnny Depp team for Johnny and one for the Amber Heard team for Amber and one for the Amber Heard team for Johnny. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, but that would make sense, right? Unless you believed that you couldn't find any forensic psychologist. You know, there's a small chance that the Amber Heard legal team believes that, well, there's no forensic psychologist that will not find condemning personality traits in Amber Heard. So we'll let Johnny Depp's team have one and we'll just try to refute it, but we're not going to get our own forensic psychologist. You know, obviously that can happen sometimes, but anyway, I'm looking forward to that because then if there are conceptualizations on the table, I'll have a richer conceptualization of why Johnny Depp would have done it. I mean, we've heard about the abuse that he went through, so there are conceptualizations there, but they're not very hard to understand. So why would someone be insulting and mean frequently like that? Well, it could be like the histrionic, like I said, as a learned way when you're young, as a way of trying to keep someone down so that you get attention. You know, you could imagine that happening. You have a younger sister and maybe they're the cute one and they get the attention and this is normal really for all siblings to do this, to try to get in front of that kid and get more attention because you want to be the cute one. You want to be the loved one. And you might even put that kid down, that younger sibling down, so that they slink away and then you're there, the only one left to get the attention. Now, if you have trauma around that, then you're going to times that times 100 and it's going to be a lot worse and more vindictive and more horrible, right? And then that becomes locked in and then that's just a pattern that you engage in because all the assumptions are there later on and you might actually just be in a constant berating of Johnny Depp because you irrationally believe that there's a finite amount of attention in the world and if he's getting attention or believes in himself, then you want to put that down. Another more common conceptualization that I'll come to is that Amber Heard was verbally abused growing up and she was put down and she was told that, or at least shown through behavior, through abuse perhaps, that she doesn't matter and that she's a piece of crap. That becomes internalized. As I've said before, there are various different ways of dealing with that once it becomes internalized. You essentially start believing that you are a piece of crap. You're positive that you're worthless. There's something deeply wrong with you. you'll never amount to anything, and you have to constantly trick everyone into believing that you're not a piece of crap, and you can never really reveal who the real you is, because everyone will know what a piece of crap you are. And by the way, if you suffer from this schema and it sounds familiar to you, it's a excellent thing to address in therapy, because it's not true. I've never met a person that believed that there was something deeply flawed about them and concluded that there actually was something even remotely deeply flawed for them. It's a belief that was based on how you were being treated as a child, and it's a tragic adult manifestation of the abuse that you went through, and completely unfair, and it's the abuse that keeps on giving, if you know what I'm saying. So you are being abused verbally. In schema therapy, you have three different ways of coping with it. You can either surrender, avoid, or overcompensate. And to surrender to that is to just say, yeah, I'm a piece of crap, and I'm just gonna live a life that incurs a lot of people thinking I'm a piece of crap, because I am a piece of crap. It's self-sabotage in a nutshell. And avoidance is, I'm going to avoid anything that will, you know, draw questions around me being a piece of crap or not. So I might avoid relationships. I might get a very easy job. I might avoid talking. You know, there's an avoidance of just like, I don't want the question to even be raised. The overcompensate defense is to overcompensate by getting out ahead of it. You might always try to be perfect. You might insult other people. You know, by comparison, if someone else is a piece of crap, then you're not a piece of crap. So that is a possible conceptualization that we might build data for as we move forward.
How did he respond?
I believe he's heard her call him that himself.
Hey, Deserving listeners, today's episode is sponsored by HelloFresh. When you sign up, use the code Seattle16. HelloFresh sends you easy-to-make meal kits delivered right to your door every week. Ingredients travel from farm to your doorstep in under a week, so they're always fresh, all without having to leave your house, which appeals to me because I hate running errands. Puts me in a bad mood, to be honest. HelloFresh is super flexible. You can skip weeks when you need to. You can pick your favorites from 50 different weekly options. In our house, we love all the recipes, but some of them that are really great are the citrus beef tacos, their barbecue sloppy joes, and their pizzas. You know, me and my pizzas. So go to HelloFresh.com/Seattle16, that's Seattle 16, and use the code Seattle16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. Again, go to HelloFresh.com/Seattle16 and use the code Seattle16 for up to 16 free meals and 3 free gifts. And remember that HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit.
And how was the lighting in that area?
There's lights in the hallway, but we're standing in an open doorway that the wall is all windows. Sunlight's coming through, and you could operate in this light. There's that much light.
Did you notice any marks on her face when you were speaking with her?
No.
All right, so to catch you up, there was a long cross-examination of Johnny Depp's older sister. She was, I'm just going to say, resistant to the questions. There were several objections and approaching of the bench, and I'm guessing that the Amber Heard lawyer was expressing frustration that the witness wasn't cooperating. I don't know the circumstances for Johnny Depp's sister. Of course, she's protective of him. But there were certain questions where I was like, it's pretty obvious what the answer is. Like there was a text exchange between the sister and Johnny Depp in which she was being questioned about, and they had shown it on the display, and it said, stop drinking, stop coke, stop coke. Stop, you know, and it those three right in a row, stop drinking, and another text, stop coke, and another text, stop coke. And when they kept asking her questions like, what are you referring to? And she's like, I don't know what I was referring to. Clearly, you're trying to get him to stop using cocaine, right? And she says, I don't know what I meant by that. I don't know I don't remember making that text. And you're like, well, what possible other reason would it be? You know, there are other possibilities, I suppose, like stop drinking coke, but of course that's ridiculous. And so I don't know, there was a number of moments like that, and slogging through that again reminds me of sitting in courtrooms in my early career and just being like so bored and just thinking like, can we just, but you know, they got to go through the process anyway. So there's all that, and the sister was being asked about bias, I think, because the legal team seemed to be suggesting that the sister, really loved Vanessa, Johnny Depp's previous wife, and didn't like Amber and was against her. They didn't, to me, demonstrate any kind of bias in that way. But the sister really didn't have much to say because she wasn't there. She never witnessed violence. I don't even know if she even witnessed him intoxicated, you know, on other substances. She did mention pills, I think opiates and cocaine and alcohol. So now we have Johnny Depp's friend from before he was famous. They were musicians together. They remained friends. And then later on, Johnny Depp, as he was starting to make money, I believe in the 90s, became a patron to him because he was an artist and paid for his bills, gave him a home, gave him an art studio, and said, I just want you to make art and live in my building. The friend seems like a really sweet guy, very relatable guy. And it's kind of a breath of fresh air because the sister was, I don't think she was very comfortable. What they're asking about now is the incident, a very important incident in the case, which is when there was alleged violence between Amber Heard and Johnny Depp. Johnny Depp's team alleges that Amber Heard, the pattern of her violence, threw a glass or some sort of glass thing at Johnny Depp, and it actually severed his finger. The Amber Heard team will say that it was in self-defense or something like this. So they're trying to get witness accounts, and the friend was there shortly after. He had arrived in the hallway outside of the Johnny Depp Amber Heard residence afterwards and had seen the wine on the ground and had heard like maybe there was an incident. The next day, they are changing the locks and he again runs into Amber Heard, but not Johnny Depp, and other people in the hallway. Amber Heard and others are telling the friend that they are changing the locks because Johnny Depp was violent. And there's some questions as to whether or not that violence occurred or if Amber Heard made it up. And one of the key pieces of evidence that Johnny Depp's team is trying to highlight is that a number of people observed Amber Heard directly after or within 24 hours of the alleged violence that she experienced, she alleges. Then, I think 6 days later, she produces pictures of wounds on her face. And if she had wounds on her face 6 days later or some time later, then you would think that they would be present the next day. So they're asking the friend, did you see any wounds on her face? And he just said no. And he knows that's what he's going to be asked. And he's very clear to the jury that there was a lot of light and he was very close to her. So there was nothing obstructing his view. So that's important information. Someone was right there observing her, and that could be convincing to the jury. Now, possible factors to think about when we hear testimony like this. One is that he's a friend of Johnny Depp. Not only a friend, but deeply in debt to Johnny Depp and deeply, you could say, dependent. I don't know about currently, like in 2022, but he owes Johnny Depp a lot. So that can involve our conscious decisions and our subconscious perceptions and decisions regarding how we would testify in a situation like this. So if, for example, he was one of Amber Heard's friends and he said that he saw no wounds on her face, then it would be hard not to take his word. But do I think he's lying? No, I don't. But we just have to think about that and understand that there are subconscious motivations as well, which brings me to my second point, which is memory. Eyewitness accounts are notoriously not reliable, yet we rely on them in court proceedings and in life to a high degree. We've done many studies on this. It's not hard to study. In fact, one of the more prominent research figures on this very topic is, I can't remember her name. She's at the University of Washington here in Seattle, my alma mater. Elizabeth Loftus is her name, I believe. I'm pretty sure that's the one. Anyway, there's a lot of evidence demonstrating that not only are our memories about events like this bad, but they also can be altered over time. We tend to believe that memories are events that get recorded in our brain, and then as we remember them, we access that file like a computer. But that's not the way memories work. Every time we remember something, something, we are reconstructing it and then re-narrativizing it. We're creating it again out of a number of different associations, which adds a lot of opportunity for every time you remember something for it to become more and more distorted. It is as if you do that telephone game when you're in a circle, you know, when you're in elementary school, demonstrating how things can change, rumors can change over time and other kinds of analogies to things. But you say a sentence to one person and then they repeat the sentence and you just go around the room. And by the time it gets to the other side, it's always completely different than the original statement, at least the majority of the time. Well, that's what memory is like. It's not always like that. It's not like every time you remember something, it is necessarily degraded or altered, but it definitely has that possibility. So for everyone that is talking about their memories, we have to consider that. Because for me, when I watch this as a citizen, I'm not involved in this case, I'm wondering, I'm curious as to what really happened. And those are just thoughts that go through my mind. Could he have seen a wound, one, and just either ignored it because he didn't want to see it, because we all understand that there's denial, or said, that doesn't look like a wound. That's probably makeup or something. I don't know if this happened, but it's absolutely possible, and I would not be surprised if a friend of Johnny Depp, seeing Amber Heard in that moment, hearing about Johnny Depp being violent, might have even registered a bruise on her face. Maybe not a big, obviously it's a gash or there's lots of blood. It'd be hard not to recognize that or remember that. But I could imagine someone seeing that bruise and then going like, well, I don't believe Johnny Depp would be violent because he's a good person and he would never do that. And then the next day, or even later that day, as you're remembering it, maybe you're telling a friend like, yeah, it was weird, you know, today, changing the locks, and you know, they talked about violence. And then the friend asks, you know, did you see any kind of bruises on Amber Heard's face? And this memory is now being recalled, but it's filtered through the desire not to have seen that bruise, and then the bruise just goes away. That happens. And then you just keep remembering that false memory over and over again.
Did you see any bruises?
No.
Did you see any redness?
No.
Did you notice any swelling?
No.
Did it look like Ms. Heard was wearing any makeup?
No.
Had you seen her wearing makeup before?
Yeah.
And you had seen her not wearing makeup before?
Yeah,
Okay, so that is a good point. I think they're trying to get out ahead of cross-examination that, okay, she had bruises, but she didn't want to alarm people, and so she covered them up. You know, there's the paparazzi and that sort of thing. So it's not surprising you couldn't see it because she covered up with makeup. So they're asking him, did you notice any makeup? And he says, no, I did not notice any makeup. And then they ask, have you ever seen her in makeup before? And he says, yes, I've definitely seen her in makeup before. Yeah, I think that if someone had a bruise on a certain part of their face and they were good at makeup, you would not notice that they were using makeup. I've seen people use makeup. In fact, rather recently, I went to the dermatologist, and I actually have two wounds. Stacy, my wife, I started, you know, when I would sit down to do videos, I'd look at my face because I don't look at my face in the mirror ever. Making these videos makes me hyper aware of, like, that's what my face looks like. Anyway, so I sit down, I'm like, oh my God, you know, because a number of days ago it was very prominent. So I asked my wife I was like, do you have makeup for this sort of thing? And she's like, yeah. And so she busts it out, she puts it on. I looked at myself in the camera, and this one mainly, because this one looked really gross. And so she put makeup on that, and it virtually disappeared on camera.
So I'm looking, and I turn around, get on the other side, we're in the doorway. So I'm on this side with the light shining this way from the doorway with the lights above, but the sunshine, and she's got her face out like this looking, you know, to show me, and I'm looking, and I go, I inspect the face. I'm looking at her forehead. I'm looking at the side of a side of her eye. I'm looking at her cheek. I'm looking at her chin. I'm looking at the other side of the face. I'm looking at the whole thing, and I don't see anything.
By the way, if you hear someone kind of breathing in the background, it's not me. I actually mute my microphone when we're watching. I'll get an echo sound if I don't do that. But someone's very close to the microphone, I think chewing gum and breathing. It's bothersome to me. But anyway, this is a lot more compelling, obviously, that he saw Amber shortly after, asked what happened, and she said Johnny Depp threw a phone at her, and he says, where? And she sticks her face out and says, indicating over in this region. He, according to his testimony, deeply inspected her face everywhere, tried to get some really good light, got very close, and saw no indication of injury. So if she had makeup covering it up, she would have said so, right, in that moment. She was, well, you can't see it because I put makeup on. So that's notable, obviously.
I don't see anything I don't see a cut, a bruise, swelling, redness. It's just Amber's face that she's going like this and showing me. So I'm not seeing anything. I back up and I'm making a joke. I make a joke going, well, I don't see anything, but maybe all the beauty from one side of your face to the other side of the face is outshining everything, so I can't see anything. And she's laughed and she's, smiled. And I just looked at everybody and said, hey, it sounds nuts.
Interesting. So again, according to his testimony, he actually said to her, I don't see anything. But then he made a joke saying maybe the beauty from the other side of the face, went over to the other and covered it up or something. And then according to his testimony, she laughed at that. So if that's even remotely close to what happened, you would think that if there were the sort of wounds I think we will see later when they show pictures, those would have not only been present at this moment, but worse, right? Now, does that mean that Amber Heard was not abused? No, because there are times when people are being abused and they know or they think they're not going to be believed or taken seriously, and so they will lie as a way of trying to get people to respond.
What was her reaction when you kissed her on that side of the face?
Nothing.
Did she flinch?
No.
All right, another data point. According to his testimony, he kissed her on the side of the face that she claimed was a wound, and she didn't have a reaction to that.
And how long did that conversation last?
3 minutes.
Okay, whoever is chewing gum into a microphone in that courtroom, they got to stop that. For those of you with misophonia, I have 20% version of it. It's like, why? And the person doing it is also, they keep breathing and sighing. They're chewing their gum and then they're like, chew, chew, chew. Or maybe that's two people. One person is chewing gum, another person is sighing every 3 seconds. Just 3 more inches from the microphone and we'd be fine. Anyway, so he's talking about the next day. So there was the day of the incident. He talked to Amber the next day. And then another day that he talked to Amber for a few minutes. And again, according to him, with good lighting and according to him, no makeup. Again, saw no indication of injury to her face.
You yourself are not familiar with what type of makeup Amber Heard uses on a daily basis?
I don't know what she uses on a daily basis.
Okay, so I'll catch you up on what I didn't show. They asked about additional instances in which the friend had seen Amber Heard, and there were other events shortly after the alleged violence on May 21st where he did not see any indication of bruising or injury. He was asked if he saw makeup. He said absolutely not. She just looked like Amber. And so according to his testimony, she didn't wear makeup at all every single time that she saw him, even when he saw her when she was out and about on the town. Who knows? Maybe Amber Heard doesn't wear makeup. But I was guessing that Cross was going to attack that. But that time, according to him, she said, look, this is where the injury is. And she didn't say, I covered it up with makeup so you can't see it. She thought it would be able to be seen.
Ms. Heard was there. Were you aware she was on her way to somebody else's birthday party? Not yours, but somebody else's that day?
No.
Can you tell me what her hairstyle was that day?
It was just down.
Down as in?
Just regular. She has it up now. She's got some kind of hairstyle. But no, she was no hair down, regular. No makeup, just hanging.
Well, when you say no makeup, you don't know she was not wearing makeup, correct?
For a fact?
Correct.
No.
And you don't know whether she had applied Amica cream, correct?
No.
Right. That's what I was thinking when he was saying every time he saw her, she was not wearing makeup. I thought, well, there's obvious makeup, obviously, and then there is very subtle makeup. And sometimes people will wear very subtle makeup.
When you had to move out of the penthouse to go to Sweetser, do you recall Mr. Depp telling you that this was Amber's fault and referring to her as a cunt?
Can I read this thing first so that
yes,
way I
please.
See what's going on?
So to catch you up, Amber Heard's legal team are asking Johnny Depp's friend if he recalls getting texts from Johnny Depp with language from Johnny Depp saying that, you know, Johnny Depp was texting his friend saying, I hope my wife, Amber Heard, is dead in a car or something, and using foul language to describe Amber Heard. Okay, now it's interesting. The texts are pretty strong language. People get in fights with their partners, but it's particular if someone is saying to a friend, I hope my wife is found dead in a trunk of a car. I don't know how many people would take it that far, right? We can have little flash thoughts that are intrusive when we're really upset along those lines, potentially, particularly if you went through trauma like Johnny Depp did. But it's another thing to actually say it and type it and send it to someone. It doesn't indicate he's abusive, but it certainly paints a picture. All right, well, that does it for that episode. Everyone out there, please take care of yourself because you deserve it. You really, really do.